is Night Call. Broadcast live with host Russ Gibb and tonight's guest,
Mrs. Sharon Seitz. Tonight's subject, the challenge of the ocean.
You participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Now here's Night Call host, Russ Gibb.
Hello, night people. This is Gibb. Standing by in Los Angeles, California is Mrs. Sharon Seitz, a housewife, a secretary, and the first woman in history to sail solo across the Pacific Ocean from Los Angeles to Honolulu. If you'd like to ask Mrs. Seitz a question or make a comment on tonight's topic, the challenge of the ocean, give us a call here at our national night call number. The number to call is area code 313-846-6601. The lines are now open. You may call from anywhere. Collect. Please make the call station to station. The number to call us at is area code 313-846-6601. If you get a busy signal, just dial us again. That's area code 313-846-6601. Sharon, why did you decide to sail the Pacific Ocean by yourself? Sharon?
Yes?
Why did you decide to sail the Pacific Ocean by yourself?
Well, I think really...
Hello?
It was an opportunity to break from a sameness in life. We all get into a rut. It was a chance...
I think we're having some difficulty with our connection here. I think we'll ask Sharon to hang up and have the operator redial her and see whether or not we can get Mrs. Seitz on the telephone here. Here's the number, if you'll just dial her on. This is the lady, you'll recall, who made it across the Pacific Ocean all the way from Los Angeles to Honolulu. Previous to this, it's my understanding that Sharon was a dental technician. And, of course, we're going to want to find out on Night Call why a dental technician would want to take that big trip, why they would want to make that big trip all the way over to Honolulu. And while our engineers attempt to get out on the line... Hello, Sharon? Hello? All right. Hello? Yes. Okay, there's the operator telling us that she got disconnected, and we knew that. Hello, Sharon? We spoke with Sharon the other afternoon, and we asked her about the challenge, you know, why. Why would anyone want to take that trip? And she had some interesting answers, and if we can get her back on the line here, we'll... find out what reason she's giving. Our engineers are attempting to make contact out in California and see if we can get Miss Seitz back on the phone. One thing that she mentioned, that when she was by herself on the ship, that she'd only had navigation lessons probably about 2 weeks before she decided to set sail on this voyage. And having had a little bit of navigation experience myself, I would say that this lady must be very, very courageous. She also informed me that, contrary to published reports, she was not a divorcee, but a widowed woman.
Go ahead, please.
Hello, Sharon.
Yes, Russ.
Gee, I'm sorry we lost you there.
Well, something happened on the phone line somewhere. It went dead.
Right, I told you, coming across the mountain sometimes is rather difficult because the connections go microwave over the Rockies. Sharon, I was filling the people in a little bit about some of your experiences, but I think we'll let you do that again. And I'll go back to my original question, and which was, why did you decide to sail the Pacific Ocean by yourself?
I think basically it was an opportunity to express myself. It was something that I could do to get away from the sameness of life and being in a rut. It gave me a chance to renew a confidence in myself. It was a challenge which I accepted.
You keep mentioning the word yourself. You were trying to prove something then to yourself, were you not?
I think probably. Prove to myself and to skeptics.
Well, what was this thing that you were trying to prove?
Just simply that it could be done, and it had not been done before, and I just simply knew that I could do it. A woman had never sailed the Pacific alone before, and I just could see no reason why a woman couldn't do it as well as a man.
Do you think that our society is so constricting today that individuals like yourself have to strike out dramatically to exert themselves?
Yes, in many respects. Yes, I think even though they say the emancipation of womanhood, I don't think it's really true. I think women are held back in many respects, whether it's equal pay for equal jobs or whatever it might be.
Well, now, what did you do before you decided to go sailing across the Pacific?
I've been a dental secretary for 12 years, 9 to 5, 5 days a week. A routine job. I enjoyed it very much, but life has changed a great deal now. I hope I don't ever go back to that type of work.
How did your life change?
I have a broader scope of feeling. The world has opened up to me, really. I have a greater peace within myself. It's not simply from one paycheck to another and dreading days of when you go into the same routine in the office. Things have just simply opened for me. I have a great peace within myself.
Well, now, what do you mean, a peace within yourself?
I think basically everyone has dreams in life, and many people just live on these dreams of someday I want to do this, or someday I hope this will happen. And I simply took the bull by the horns, you might say, and made it happen. And accepted it when it came along. I thought this was an opportunity for me to prove myself and not put off tomorrow what I wanted to do today.
In other words, you were leading a rather, what we would consider, a normal life.
Oh, yeah.
And yet, you were slightly dissatisfied with this life.
And you would say I was leading a very successful life. I was, as everyone else, I was putting money aside for the future, and I have a nice home and furniture and car and clothes and all the things that women and men, everyone works for, considering security and all these things. This is what I had been working all these years for. This is what I had thought would make me happy. But there seemed to be a void somewhere. And when this came along, this opportunity and this challenge, suddenly I knew that all these other things weren't that important.
And so you decided to go solo across the Pacific Ocean.
Yes.
Now, I had mentioned to our listeners while the connection was broken there that, contrary to published reports, you are not a divorcee but a widowed woman.
Correct.
Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Do you think this had anything to do with your decision?
No. No, it really didn't. The only thing that it might have had to do, not with my decision, but with the fact that I started sailing at all, had my husband still been alive, maybe I would never have started sailing. So this is the only connection that is possible.
Our guest tonight, Mrs. Sharon Seitz. Our topic, The Challenge of the Ocean. You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
This is Whitey Ford speaking to you from Yankee Stadium. I always thought arthritis was something that old people got. Then I heard about Jerry Walsh. Jerry was only 18 years old, a right-hander with a good fastball, who won a trial with the Boston Red Sox. Then the crippler hit him.
When I had the first operation on the first hip, I went in very bravely. When it came time for the second operation, which was only a month later, and still having the pain of the first, I really had a halftime talk with myself to go back up there. It was like somebody beating your brains out in baseball one time and then going back in thinking that, or knowing that they were going to do it again.
That's guts. He'd have made a great ball player. For Jerry, for the 12 million other people in this country who suffer with arthritis, do Whitey Ford a favor, will you? Get in there and pitch for the Arthritis Foundation. And when they ask you to give, give, because that's the only way we're going to strike out arthritis. Thank you.
This is Night Call, and here is host, Russ Gibb.
Hello again, night people. Our guest tonight, Mrs. Sharon Seitz. You'll recall this is the lady who sailed solo across the Pacific Ocean from Los Angeles to Honolulu, the first woman in history to make this journey by herself. And if you'd like to ask a question of Sharon or make a comment about the role of women in the world today, and particularly women who feel the challenge of the ocean, give us a call here at our night call number. The number to call us at is area code 313-84-666-01. The lines are now open, and you may call from anywhere collect. Please make the call station to station. The number, area code 313-84-666-01. And if you've ever had that small voice inside you sort of give you a hint that maybe you ought to get out and sail the ocean, you probably want to talk to Sharon Seitz, the amazing Sharon Seitz. The number to call, area code 313-84-666-01. Sharon, what was the biggest decision that you had to make on your trip?
In other words, about your whole plan.
I think knowing that if I gave up my job and the security I had from that job, that this voyage was going to cost me my life savings, and that when I returned, I would be back where I started 12 years ago.
Well, how did you overcome this fear?
It wasn't really a fear. It was just a decision that I had to think over a lot, knowing what the consequences could be. So it was a big step to finally say it was worth it if I lost everything I had.
Did you ever doubt yourself?
No, and I really didn't. And now I wouldn't take $1 million for having made that trip, but I'm not sure I'd take $1 million to do it again either. But I've never been sorry for a moment from the first time I made the decision that I made that decision and that I carried it through and that I was successful.
Well, now, some people get their kicks out of jumping out of airplanes, other racing automobiles. How did you come to decide that the challenge that you wanted to take on was the challenge of the Pacific Ocean?
Well, it has to go back to last October when I first started sailing lessons. I had never been on a boat prior to that, or a sailboat. One Sunday after church, I was aimlessly driving, and I found myself at the marina here on the coast of Los Angeles. And I was just watching the people in the boats when I saw a sign advertising a sailing school. I had never realized that people took sailing lessons as you take golf lessons or tennis lessons or something else. And I took down the phone number and made my call and inquired about it, and I started sailing school 2 weeks later.
Now, this was all only last October.
Yes. I first stepped on a sailboat October 23rd of last year on my first lesson. This was Al Adams Sailing School at the marina, and he soloed me on a 21-foot boat in 38 minutes after we first started the actual sailing.
Now, wait. You mean after your first lesson?
Yes, the first 38 minutes of my first lesson on the boat.
You actually took control of a sailboat then?
He stayed on the dock and pushed me off, and I sailed the boat.
That's pretty rapid learning, if you ask me. Okay, so what else happened to you now? Got you off the first 36 minutes.
This was, I think, at the point, really, that the boat took over my life. The course was a four-week course, four evenings, and 4 hours of private instruction. And by the time I finished that, I bought my first boat, which was a 21-foot boat with a main and jib, a keel boat. And I won my first regatta 8 weeks later.
Now, you're going to have to tell me what a keel boat is.
A boat with a lead keel built into it for stability rather than a centerboard or a daggerboard as some small sailboats have.
Now, how large a craft is a keel boat?
A boat, 16 or 18 feet could have a keel. Once you get much smaller than that, then they don't. They have centerboards or daggerboards.
Now, you say that the boat took over your life. What do you mean by a boat taking over your life?
It was so completely fascinating and so relaxing. It was as if the boat was the doctor and I was the patient. It was completely changing my life. I no longer could even be efficient in the office. All I could think of was boat, and I wanted nothing but to be on the boat, to be sailing. I even addressed my Christmas cards on the boat. I did everything on the boat.
Now, you were still working at this time that you were taking the lessons.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh. Yes, I didn't quit my job until the end of March. I had to give notice, sufficient notice on the job, and I had not made my decision definitely to sail to Honolulu until the last of February. The idea actually didn't enter my mind until about Christmas time that I would do this.
Now, you mentioned that the boat takes over your life, and I have the impression that you're saying that this boat gave you a form of escape.
No, I think expression.
Expression. Now, what's the difference in your mind between the terminology of escape and the terminology of expression?
I feel like life has broadened so that now I can express myself and see the world if this is as it turns out to be for me. I'm no longer confined to an office or to a particular area.
You have escaped the office.
Well, yes, maybe. But not an escape from myself. An escape into the world. To discover everything the world can hold.
Now, why can a boat do this and an office cannot?
Because I think you have to be involved with other people and other ways of living and even other countries and other traditions and the problems of the world. I hope to see a great deal of the world in C-sharp and be among other peoples of the world.
Do you think that there was anything involved here that is saying that you were in complete command of that boat? You were master of your own destinies, as it were, right?
Yes.
With the boat. Whereas in the office, you were not.
Yeah, this is true. However, I must say, I was in command of the boat and my destinies, except for the good Lord above. There were many times out there in those long 39 days that I saw the hand of the Lord, and I'm sure that it was not me alone that got me there.
I'd like to go into that, but right now we have a caller from Springfield, Massachusetts, a gentleman who is listening on WBAL, Mr. Bill Odey. Hello, Bill. Speak right up. You're on night call.
Yes, sir.
How are you, sir? Real fine. Bill, your question or comment?
Yes, am I given to believe that Sharon Sachs gave up her life savings to make this trip?
She gave up her life savings, Sharon?
Yes, this is true.
Hello?
Yes.
She said she did?
That's correct, Bill.
Well, I want to congratulate her. She sounds like a person who has conviction and purpose in life.
Bill,
thank you very much.
Are you planning to go back to being a secretary, Sharon?
No, not at the moment at any rate. I'm working against a deadline now to get my book out, which will be entitled You Wouldn't Dare. After I get the book published, then we'll see what goes on from there. I do hope to start lecturing soon. I have a large library now of film which I took out there, both stills and 16mm movie film, and I have several dates set up now for lectures, and it looks like the response is going to be great enough that I may be able to possibly even make a national tour with the lectures.
Bill?
Have
you ever thought about doing something similar? Giving up the humdrum world and striking out?
What's that?
Have you ever thought about doing something similar for yourself?
Oh, I'm doing it right now.
What are you doing?
Is Sharon listening to this?
Yes, she should. You should be able to hear one another.
Hello, hello?
Yes, I can hear you.
I've shut off the radio. I met her work in New York City about a year ago at the Leaving Kingdom of Massachusetts.
Right.
I thought that there were too many people who wear masks. Make any sense to you, Sharon? People who wear masks. What's the expression?
People that wear masks.
Yes, hypocrites.
All right. Speak up, Bill, will you?
Yes, the hypocrites.
Okay.
And I went to New York City, and I won't name any names. I worked for a very reputable bank in New York City. And I found out there was a similar situation. I stayed there about a year. And the routine of the work there and so forth and so on led me to go to Europe. And on my vacation, I just came back about a month ago from Denmark, where I found the same thing that she found, this inner peace, I found direction, which I think she found, if I'm led to believe. Is that correct?
Yes, that is a very good point.
Yes.
In other words, both of you are saying that you kicked over the traces, as it were. That you kicked over the traces, as it were, and that you dared to do what you really wanted to do.
Right.
Has this cost you anything, Bill?
Oh, sure. I came back from Denmark about a month ago. Came back to work. And immediately, well, 3 or 4 days, it's been a lot of confusion sitting where I was working. Confusion such as what direction I was taking. And I told them that they couldn't tell me, I wouldn't tell them. So they thought I was a smart aleck, and they asked me to go out the front door. So I did, and then they blocked me from getting any employment from banks in New York City.
Why would they block you, Bill?
And I went into debt to go to Germany Wednesday night for a couple of years. So I went into debt. The creditors don't know where I'm going, because if I told them, I wouldn't get the money.
I see.
So I'm in debt about $600. It's secured. But if I had told them where I was going, I don't think that I would get the money.
Bill, if you had it to do over again, would you make the same decision?
Oh, exactly the same.
Sharon?
Yes, absolutely.
Without a doubt.
Well, we have two people that are saying the same thing. Bill, I want to thank you for your comments. They've been most interesting.
Can I say one more thing?
Why, sure. Go ahead, Bill.
My background is very reputable. I have graduated from the finest schools in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
At private school and college. And there was a great deal of crisis. United States today, real crisis, and I hope that we can pull out of it.
Okay, I want to thank you for your comments.
All right, thank you very much, sir.
Mr. Bill Odie from Springfield, Massachusetts, a listener on WBAL.
And I want to congratulate Sharon.
Okay. Thank you, Bill, for calling.
Thank you.
Good night. Sharon?
Yes.
Here's another kindred soul.
Yes, I like what he had to say. I'm sure that is a very good expression of some of my feelings also.
Our guest tonight, Mrs. Sharon Seitz, the lady who sailed solo across the Pacific Ocean. Our topic tonight,
The Challenge of the Ocean. And if you'd like to call us here at Night Call, give us a buzz at area code 313-846-6601. The lines are now open. You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
This is Julie Harris. We all know that arthritis means pain and crippling, but to the victim, it can also mean the end of a career.
Well, I was in the advertising business. And you can't do this and be in bed at the same time on crutches. And, well, I was out for about 3 years, and it's pretty hard to make a comeback after 3 years. And so I've now found other work to do.
It was Shakespeare who wrote, "You take my house when you do take the prop that doth sustain my house. You take my life when you do take the means whereby I live." I'm here to ask you to join me in the fight against this cruel and tragic disease. When the volunteer from the Arthritis Foundation asks you, please give, and give with all your heart. Thank you.
This is Night Call, and here is host, Russ Gibb.
Our topic tonight on Night Call, the Challenge of the Ocean. Our guest, Mrs. Sharon Seitz, the first woman in history to sail solo across the Pacific Ocean from Los Angeles to Honolulu. And if you'd like to ask Mrs. Seitz a question or make a comment, give us a buzz here at our national Night Call number. The number to call is area code 313-846-6601. You may call from anywhere, collect. Please make the call station to station. The lines are now open. The number is area code 313-846-6601. Sharon, what did you have to take with you on the trip?
Well, there was a great deal of planning and preparation that went into this trip, which I have to give all credit to my sailing instructor, Al Adams, for. He helped me to choose the boat, and he designed and changed all of the rigging on the boat so that it was designed to my strength and capabilities. I am 5'7 and 115 pounds. I'm no Amazon, and therefore I would not be capable of the strength it would take to carry a great deal of canvas, particularly in high velocities of winds and wave action.
Now, you didn't carry an engine on board then?
I have an engine in the boat, but I didn't take any fuel.
Well, now, that doesn't sound too logical, does it?
Well, yes, if you stop and think about it. The boat has a small inboard engine, but were I to take, say, even 20 gallons of gasoline, that would cost me 20 gallons of water. And what good would 20 gallons of fuel do me out there in that vast ocean? So it was a matter of, in a small boat, taking the necessities and leaving home the non-necessities. But I was sailing to Honolulu, not motoring.
And there's a difference.
Oh, yes.
Well, what was the name? I don't think we've ever established the name of your craft.
Oh, it was Sea Sharp.
The Sea Sharp. Is that spelled the letter C, or is that the...
S-E-A.
I see.
Actually, it's a play on words, because I do have a somewhat of a musical background, and the two tied in quite well together.
All right, you have the craft. Now, what type of sails must one have for sail across the Pacific Ocean? Just ordinary sails?
I had six sails. The large main and large Genoa, which is normal sailing in normal weather. Then I had a smaller jib.
A what?
A smaller jib, or a small Genoa.
I see.
I had a storm trysail, which I carried during the storm. And I had twin Genoas, which were on twin poles that I used when I was running with the trade winds.
In other words, you got the trade winds right out of Los Angeles and just got right across the Pacific, is that it?
No, I didn't hit the trade winds till a little over 700 miles out.
And, well, how did you get that far? Did you have to tack?
No, I was on starboard tack all the way, but you start out close haul leaving Los Angeles, and you get to a broad reach. In other words, it's a gradual thing until you're running before the wind.
Now, how long had you been sailing before you set up on this journey?
I had been sailing 5 months. Actually, you can't say 5 months experience because so much of the time was spent in preparing the boat and getting it ready that I wasn't actually sailing during that time.
Now, what other things would you have on board? You have your sails, and you mentioned water. How much water did you actually carry, Sharon?
I had 36 gallons of water. I had dehydrated foods for 24 days, and I had canned goods for 40 days. Then on my life raft, I had concentrated food and canned water. On the life raft also, I had fishing line and hooks, knife, underwater flashlight, plastic sextant, extra compass. Even my life raft was equipped very thoroughly. I have spare parts on the boat, even a jury mast in case I had lost my mast out there.
Now wait, a what?
A jury mast.
A jury mask?
Mast.
Mast. All right, now you'll have to tell me what that is. I'm a landlubber from way back, you know.
Boats, particularly the Trans-Pacific racing yachts, are driving very hard, of course, out there. They're after speed and time, and some boats do lose their mast. For a sailboat to lose their mast, probably the worst thing you can imagine, because if you lose it, you have nothing to keep the sails up. So I had a small mast that I could have rigged on the boat or juried on the boat to keep me going if I had lost the mast that came with the boat.
And you also mentioned that you had food. Now, what happened if the water supply were to run out on a ship? Is it true that you can catch fish and live off the liquids there?
For a certain length of time, but not for very long. The body just has to have fresh water. Of course, you can always hope that you get in enough rain squalls that you can catch fresh water in a sail and save it. But our water was planned in such a way in small individual containers that if any one of them sprung a leak, I wasn't losing the total water supply. A great deal of thought and preparation went into this trip with just such a thing as this.
Did you take anything else with you outside of the things that you've mentioned?
Oh, yes. Of course, I had my navigation equipment.
I had mentioned a while back that you had only had, what, about your last lesson before you took off on the trip?
The last 3 weeks I spent cramming in navigation. I had very little exposure to it prior to that. I took my first actual sextant shot of the sun from the boat on the third day after I had left California out of sight of land.
Weren't you afraid that you'd get lost?
No, I was very confident on my navigation before I left. In fact, my navigation instructor had said, not only will I get my boat there, but he was sure that I could get any boat there.
Now, what happened during the trip out there? You're sailing in the ocean. You have water. You have food on board. But what about the things of the mind? Wouldn't someone go stark raving mad spending that much time by oneself?
Yes. In fact, I reached an emotional crisis, you might say. Probably the greatest hardship of the entire voyage was the lonesomeness of 39 days. And a 25-foot boat is terribly insignificant out there. You're just another white cap on top of another wave. I knew I would not be seen during this crossing, though many stories came out in the paper, and people have said to me they were so worried because there had been no word of me. But you really are such an insignificant, small little thing that had anyone seen me, they would have been too close.
You didn't see any other ships then during that 39 days?
No. When I was 8 days out off the coast of, still off the coast of California, a Navy patrol plane spotted me when he was on routine patrol and reported seeing me at that time to the Coast Guard in San Diego. And that was the last I saw of any human being until I was approaching the island.
Now, did you have a radio on board?
I had a transistor radio on board, which I could hear most of the way, either from the California coast or from the island, as far as getting a news report or hearing some music or something, but I had no means of communication.
Now, you mentioned that you had an emotional crisis by being alone. How did this occur? What are the symptoms of this crisis?
You have high days and low days of emotional feelings after you have been alone just so long. But finally I reached the point of wondering if maybe I was a derelict cast at sea and the world had forgotten I even existed.
You thought maybe you were lost?
No, not that I was lost, but I knew where I was, but had the world forgotten that I was even out there?
Before you set out upon your journey, did many people tell you that you were foolhardy?
Oh, yes. Yes, many. People even said to my face, if I leave, I will never be seen again.
And did you think about those comments during this crisis of emotion?
No, I never had any trouble at all with my navigation. I always knew where I was, and this was never a worry with me at all.
What about the gentleman that helped you on this trip? What was his name?
Al Adams.
Yes, Mr. Adams. Was he aware where you were at any given moment? I mean, had you plotted this out?
We had set a pre-planned course that I was to try and hold. But, of course, what he didn't know was that when I started, I had very little wind, and therefore current took over a great deal, and I was set a lot further south than we had hoped I would be. And it was at that point, further south than I should have been, that I ran into the gale that lasted 6 days. And later then, I got back onto the pre-planned course and came in exactly as I was supposed to.
Well, now, what was his reaction during all this time?
Actually, I think it was harder on him than it was on me, waiting on shore and not knowing whether everything he had planned was working out as we had hoped, not knowing whether the rigging was holding up and the boat was going as we had planned. And the pressures from people were very great.
What do you mean, pressures from people?
Well, people saying to him that he should never have let me go, that he should not have carried through, which enabled me to go. Had he not helped me, I couldn't have done it. And he was in the islands waiting for me on my arrival. The pressures over there from people wanting him to call a search. And of course, I was never overdue. I arrived before we had said I would. And so he wasn't going to call this search. He knew that if he did, it would ruin everything I had set out to do. But people just don't understand this, and they were pressuring him a great deal to call a search.
But he never did.
No, he didn't.
Did you ever have moments where you wished that they would call a search for you?
No. No, because the only time I really wished that anyone knew what was going on was during the storm, and this was from the 24th to the 30th of June, and the 2nd of July I reached the trades, and by the time I reached the trades at that moment, then everything just went great, and I was terribly happy, and I knew that I would make it.
Our guest tonight, Mrs. Sharon Seitz. Our topic, The Challenge of the Ocean. You're tuned to the Night Call Network.
This is Night Call, where you participate by calling Night Call's national phone number, 313-846-6601. Host Russ Gibb will return in 70 seconds with more Night Call.
Hello, I'm Sherry Lewis, but today I'm not going to talk about Lamb Chop or Charlie Horse. I want to talk about real children, children who have arthritis. Sounds impossible, doesn't it? We always seem to think arthritis only attacks older people. But listen.
We never gave it a thought of arthritis, being that the child was so young. Us, whoever figured a baby would come up with arthritis.
My cat says meow, my dog says bow wow. Oh listen, they're both talking now.
Well, there you have it. The reason why all of us must support medical research. Vital research that will someday bring a cure. And that's why I'm asking you to give. And give all you can to your arthritis foundation. For care today, for a cure tomorrow.
This is Night Call, and here is host, Russ Gibb.
Hello again, night people. Our guest tonight, Mrs. Sharon Seitz. Our topic, the challenge of the ocean. As you'll recall, Mrs. Seitz is the housewife and secretary and the first woman in history to sail solo across the Pacific Ocean from Los Angeles to Honolulu. And she did it in a very small craft. So if you'd like to ask a question to Mrs. Seitz or make a comment, give us a call here at our national night call number. The number to call is area code 313-846-6601. Now, you may dial us direct, and if you wish, you may make it collect. You may call from anywhere. Please make the call station to station. The number is area code 313-846-6601. The lines are now open, and we'd like to hear from you. Area code 313-846-6601. Sharon, how did you keep warm at night, and how cold did it get?
I didn't have a thermometer on board to know really how cold it was. The first couple of weeks out there, it was pretty cold, and I had a sleeping bag in the cockpit with me, which I crawled into, as well as a couple of sweatshirts and a heavy parka on. Of course, once I hit the trade winds, then it warmed up and was very beautiful at night and very warm.
Now, who guided the boat when you were asleep?
I did.
Well, how did you do that?
Mr. Adams had rigged up a self-steering mechanism for me, which was a bronze plate with indentions cut across the top and a fin like tooth fitted on the tiller. And the combination of this plus a rubber shock cord put tension on the tiller, allowed me to set it in trim with the boat and in trim with the sails, and of course I was holding at the time, and I could actually sleep an hour or two at a time. And then when I hit the trade winds and was running with the Twin Genoas, I went my longest time 39 hours and never touched the tiller.
39 hours?
Yes.
That's pretty amazing.
Yes, the boat was so beautifully balanced and everything was so well thought out that it even surprised Al when I told him on my arrival that it had gone this well.
Did you ever come close to getting flipped overboard?
Yes, several times, but I was secured to the boat at all times. I wore a harness and lifeline, and when I did have to go on the foredeck, I could snap this line and keep me on. And then I had another line, a 26-foot length line tied to the boat itself. Had I gone overboard, then I could have pulled myself back on board.
What was your most dangerous moment?
Oh, it had to be at the height of the storm.
Now, we've mentioned this storm, but we really haven't gotten into any detail on it. What was the storm? How long did it last? When did it come up, and how severe?
It started on the 24th of June. It reached velocities of about 60 knots.
Now, wait, 60 knots. That's, you're talking like a Navy man again. How fast is that?
60 to 65 miles an hour.
I see.
It lasted for 6 days. And unless anyone has ever been at sea in winds like this, particularly in a small boat, you have no idea how angry the waves can get, what the sound of a storm can be like even, what the sound of wind is like running through the rigging, a very high, shrill whistle, which is very maddening almost. The wave action is unbelievable, and constantly the boat was completely submerged with the waves, about 20 to 30 feet high, and they would crash into the boat and cover the whole boat. Each time I would simply look up and hope I would see the sky again.
That sounds pretty dramatic. You frightened me.
It was a frightening experience.
Well, what carried you through these moments?
Just the will and determination that the boat and I were both going to get there.
Did you ever pray during this time?
Oh, yes, many times.
Do you think God was with you on the trip?
Oh, I have no doubt of that. I saw evidence of this many times throughout the trip, and a great deal of the time had to be through that storm. That little boat took a tremendous beating, came through it beautifully.
You mentioned that God was with you and that he manifested himself. How did he manifest himself?
Well, I'm just sure that, for instance, during the storm, with my short experience and incapabilities, it had to be the hand of God that kept that boat from broaching. I'm sure that it wasn't just what I was doing. I was doing, of course, the best I knew how and the most I could. But after 6 days of staying awake and taking stimulant pills to stay awake and very little food, I was losing strength. I knew this, but you just have to keep fighting. Your mind becomes just a little foggy. I'm sure my reactions were not what they could have been. And it just had to be the hand of God that kept that boat upright.
Sharon, we have a caller now from Denver, Colorado, a listener on KTLN, Gladys Spar. Hello, Gladys. Speak right up. You're on night call.
Yes, uh-huh.
Yes, your comment.
I listen to you every night.
Thank you.
Can you hear?
Yes, ma'am.
Can I speak to Sharon now?
Yes, go right ahead.
Sharon, while I've been waiting to get this call from, I think you have given me answers to some of the things that I wanted to ask you about.
Yes.
I wanted to ask you if you were a girl of great religious faith before you started this trip.
I have always had some faith, but I must admit my faith has been greatly deepened. Yes.
Well, it does seem to me that a person of your youth and your size, you must have had a great deal of fear.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you now.
The question that Mrs. Spar had was, she wondered about your size, and she thought possibly that fear, because of you're a very small woman, that fear played a part in this, and that she wondered how you overcame this fear.
Yes, there were many times that I was afraid, but I think, again, my determination just overrode the fear.
Gladys?
I can't imagine anybody on a vast ocean not being very, very volcanic, really, when these great waves dash up.
Very what, Russ?
She wondered, she thought you'd be frightened right out of your wits, in other words, when the waves would come over, and I agree with Gladys. I would have, I think about that time, I would be praying 24 hours a day.
Well, this was part of my preparation from Mr. Adams. He had told me that this could and probably would happen. So when it did happen, Again, I was partially prepared for this, and he has sailed a great many thousands of miles around this world. He has a vast film library of storms and things that he has been in, and I had seen this through his eyes and through his movies of what could happen and what you do. And he had told me many stories of things that had happened at sea when he was trying to discourage me originally. So when it did happen, I was as prepared as I could be, though you are never prepared totally.
Gladys, yes. I want to thank you for your comments.
Well, thank you. It's just delightful. I mean, it's just remarkable. Everybody makes such a fuss over this man on the Atlantic.
Right, a man that did it recently across the Atlantic. Well, thank you very much, Gladys, for your comments.
Well, thank you,
sir. We're glad that you called Night Call. Gladys Spar from Denver, Colorado, a listener on KTLN radio. Sharon?
Yes?
Actually, we've got you across the Pacific. Now, what happened to you as soon as you got in to the Honolulu?
With the reception I received in Honolulu and throughout all of the islands was another story in itself and another segment of my life. It was the most gracious, warm-hearted reception that you could imagine. In my wildest thoughts or imaginations, I would have never dreamed it to be as it was.
Well, now, what happened to you in Honolulu? I know some of the things because I have some of the clippings in front of me, but tell our radio audience.
Well, on my arrival, I was given the penthouse at the Waikikian Hotel, which was a beautiful thing. And there were many people on the dock waiting to receive me with the traditional lay reception. There were many dinners and parties and luaus. Everywhere I went, it was just as if the islands were opened up to me. And I think one of the most prized possessions I have from the islands now is an official resolution passed by the Council of the City and County of Honolulu, which they adopted on July 27th in honor of my crossing to be the first woman to do so.
Sharon, in 10 seconds, would you do it again?
I said I wouldn't at that time, but I'm not so sure now.
What about your new book? What's the name of it, and when will we be able to read it?
I haven't got the publishing date yet, but the name of the book is You Wouldn't Dare.
We've been talking with Mrs. Sharon Seitz, the lady who sailed solo across the Pacific Ocean from Los Angeles to Honolulu. Thank you, Mrs. Seitz, for being our guest on Night Call. It's been a real pleasure. Tomorrow night on Night Call, our guest will be Mr. John L. Sweeney, co-chairman of the Appalachia Regional Commission. Our topic, Why Hasn't Urbanization Come to Appalachia? Until then, this is Gibb wishing you good luck and Godspeed.
Night Call is produced by the Methodist Church in cooperation with the National Council of Churches and this radio station. As a radio forum dedicated to the frank discussion of vital issues of daily life. Night Call encourages its participants to express freely and responsibly their own personal opinions.